We will now attempt a question on assessment time limits.
During a control visit on the 29th of January 2011, the customs officer discovers an under-declaration of output VAT on the VAT return to the quarter the 31st of March 2010.
By which date must a control officer raise an assessment to collect this VAT that's due? Click on A, B or C to show which date you think is the correct time limit date.
The first thing we have to do to calculate the correct date is work out those two dates, the later of which will be the assessment raising date. The first of those dates was 2 years after the end of the prescribed accounting period in question.
The VAT return in question was to the 31st of March 2010. We add on 2 years, and this takes us to the 31st of March 2012. The second date was 1 year after evidence justifying an assessment comes to light. The control visit was on the 29th of January 2011. We therefore add 1 year, taking us to the 29th of January 2012. The later of these two dates is the 31st of March 2012. As long as that date is within the overall 4 year time limit, that is the date by which the assessment must be raised. Let's now have a look at the 4 year overall limit. This is 4 years from the end of the prescribed accounting period in question. So the 31st of March 2010 plus 4 years takes us to the 31st of March 2014. The 31st of March 2012 date we calculated earlier is well within this overall time limit. So the 31st of March 2012 will be the latest date by which an assessment must be raised by the control officer.
It is possible for customs to make a global assessment. This is basically an assessment for two or more prescribed accounting periods, but which does not allocate the amount of tax involved into each of the individual periods. In the case of a global assessment, the time limit operates from the end of the earliest period included in the assessment. Make sure you don't confuse a global assessment with a document which is made up of a number of assessments for different prescribed accounting periods, which just happen to be notified together. The question of whether a global assessment has been made, or a number of separate assessments have been made, is one of fact and will be based upon the form in which the customs notify the trader. So you will need to look at these items fairly carefully.
The appeals procedure has changed with effect from the 1st of April 2009. A new tribunal has been set up to deal with all tax appeals. Therefore, the new tribunal will not only hear appeals concerning VAT, but other direct taxes as well. Initially, appeals against VAT decisions will be made to the tax chamber of the first tier tribunal. An upper tribunal will hear appeals on more complex matters and appeals from decisions of the first tier tribunal. Two main statutory instruments govern the function of the tribunals and the rules of procedure. These are SI 2009/196 and 2009/273. In the event of a dispute with customs, there are still two routes open to resolve the issue in question. In most cases, the taxpayer will ask customs to reconsider their decision. Going forward, this will be simply called a review. Customs should carry out this review within 45 days, or such longer time as is agreed with the taxpayer. Now, if this course of action is chosen, the request should be made in writing within 30 days of the disputed assessment, and relevant information should be provided to customs to back up the case for a review. This does not prejudice the trader's right to appeal to the first-tier tax tribunal if he disagrees with the outcome of the review. If the taxpayer disagrees with the outcome of the review, they can appeal to the tribunal within 30 days. The second route is to appeal the decision direct to the tribunal without first requesting a review. The appeal should be made within 30 days of the original disputed decision. Now, a significant change, with effect from the 1st of April 2009, is that costs are not generally available in the first-tier tax tribunal, unless it is decided by that tribunal that one party has acted unreasonably. In complex cases, however, costs will usually be awarded. If the taxpayer believes that the first-tier tax tribunal has made a mistake in law, it can seek permission from the first-tier tax tribunal to appeal to the upper tribunal.
It is only possible to appeal in respect of certain matters which include the following: registration or cancellation of a registration, refusal of a group registration application, assessments for VAT and/or assessments for penalties, the VAT that is chargeable on the supply of any goods or any services, the input tax that can be reclaimable by a taxable person, the use of special schemes including retail schemes, cash accounting, flat rate for farmers schemes, and so on.
The major disadvantage of an appeal is that it can be quite a lengthy procedure, particularly if it then becomes a case that is pursued through higher courts, and of course it can be costly if unsuccessful. In addition to all this, prepayment of the disputed tax is often a requirement, and of course the appeal hearing is public, so that can lead to unnecessary, perhaps unwanted, publicity. In practice, it is probably the cost of an appeal that is the major deciding factor in whether a trader goes ahead or not, especially if the case on which the appeal is being made is not a rock-solid one.
Before an appeal can be made to a tribunal, a trader must have made all VAT returns which he is required to have made to date, and have paid all the tax due on those tax returns to date as well. The effect of this rule is that really a trader is unable to appeal against any decision or any assessment if he has outstanding VAT returns or an outstanding VAT liability.
However, in P.W. Coleman, the tribunal held that an appellant had a directly enforceable right under the EC 6th Directive, now Council Directive 2006/112/EC, to have an appeal heard, and this right overrode the conditions in VATA 1994, Section 84(2).
Following that case, customs now accept that the condition that all returns and payments have to be up to date is contrary to the EC principle of proportionality. Pending any change in the UK legislation, customs will not apply for appeals to be struck out solely because returns and payments are outstanding for VAT periods which are not under dispute. They will continue to make applications where a return has not been rendered for a VAT period subject to disputed assessment, or where the VAT in dispute has not been paid. In the case of an appeal against an assessment and other certain areas: 1. The amount which customs have determined to be payable as VAT has been paid or deposited with them, or 2. On being satisfied that the appellant would otherwise suffer hardship, customs agree that the appeal be entertained notwithstanding non-payment. Note that if the hardship application is granted but subsequently the appeal is lost, default interest on the amount of the disputed VAT may be payable. Conversely, if the hardship application is lost but subsequently the appeal is won, customs are liable to pay interest on any amount of disputed VAT paid or deposited with them which is repayable. The tribunal in P.W. Coleman held that the condition 1 above was acceptable and did not conflict with EC 6th Directive because of the hardship provision under 2 above, and because customs decision on that is reviewable. So to summarise, where an appeal is being made in respect of VAT chargeable on a supply or on the assessment of a penalty, there is an additional requirement.
This requirement is that the trader must have either paid or deposited the tax demanded, or if not paid, has satisfied the appeal body that he would suffer hardship if the payment was made. To apply to the appeal body to consider waiving the requirement to pay is subject to the same time limits as the appeal, and if customs oppose the hardship application, the tribunal will hold a preliminary hearing to decide whether or not to allow the application.
The new tribunal will consist of legally qualified and non-legally qualified persons. They will be called Judge of the First Tier Tribunal and Members of the First Tier Tribunal, respectively. Once an appeal is lodged, the tribunal will allocate the case to one of four categories. These categories are as follows. 1. Default paper cases. These will usually be disposed of without a hearing. 2. Basic cases. These will usually be disposed of after a hearing, with minimal exchange of documents before the hearing. 3. Standard cases. These will usually be subject to more detailed case management and be disposed of after a hearing. 4. Complex cases, where the tribunal considers that the case will require lengthy or complex evidence or a lengthy hearing, or that it involves a complex or important issue, or that it involves a large financial sum. If it is a complex case, then it may be transferred to the upper tribunal. Decisions of the tribunal may be given orally at the hearing. A written decision must be given to the parties within 28 days after the decision has been made. A right of appeal no longer exists to the High Court. It can now be made to the upper tribunal if permission is given by the first tier tribunal. The decision of the upper tribunal is binding on lower tribunals. For example, its decisions will bind the first tier tribunal. The decision of the appeal body on questions of fact is final. From the upper tribunal, the appeal can proceed, if necessary, to the Court of Appeal and then to the House of Lords.
Now it is time for you to have a go at a summary question. Tick the statements which are correct. Here is a clue. Only 3 of the 6 statements are true. When you have had a go, click on the answer button to see if you are correct. Good luck. And that ends the lecture on control visits, appeals, and assessments.